Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. This week, we honor the memory of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., who fought tirelessly for civil rights, but also for the rights of workers, strong public education, and social justice for all Americans. So today, it's fitting that we have some stories of shocking injustices, as well as some top news across our region and our nation. The former superintendent of the Mountain Empire Unified School District in rural East County has been charged with felony conflict of interest, profiting personally off charter schools that he helped open up that took taxpayer money away from public schools. Now, we have been looking into the questionable nature of Steve Van Zandt's charter school arrangements for the last 6 years, so stay tuned for details of our findings. On Green Scene, we'll tell you about a corporation's copyright claim to own the names of cherished landmarks in Yosemite National Park. Listen up to hear how some activists are fighting back and what you can do to help stop Delaware North's greedy grab, since this is the same company that runs concessions at Qualcomm Stadium and Petco Park right here in San Diego. Then, we'll have a chilling story that sounds like a plot from a disaster movie, but unfortunately, it's horrifyingly real. The worst methane gas leak in history at a site operated by Southern California Gas Company has forced thousands in North Los Angeles County to flee their homes, and now the contamination has spread across the San Fernando Valley. Worse, efforts to plug the leak have thus far failed, and now some experts are warning that the entire wellhead may be ready to blow up, igniting a fire that could have unthinkable consequences. Hear about actions that you can take to ask the federal government to prevent future leaks at aging gas and oil facilities across our nation. From Public News Service, we'll have top national news stories today, including highlights from the weekend's debate among Democratic presidential candidates, some Martin Luther King Day highlights nationwide, and efforts to block coal companies from mining on public lands. The Centers for Disease Control have issued a travel warning, urging pregnant women and women of childbearing age not to go to Mexico and a dozen more locations in the Caribbean, South, and Central America due to a pandemic of Zika virus, which has been linked to brain damage in babies. And then we'll have details on the governor's proposed budget for California, on some tax relief locally for flood victims here in San Diego County, and some good news for book lovers, students, and researchers in Lakeside and Casa de Oro in Spring Valley, where new libraries have just been approved. Our newsmaker interview today is with Steve Loria from California Health Network, and he'll be telling you about Santee's Health Awareness Month, including a lot of free fitness services as well as discounted or free health services for Santee residents throughout January. And then on the lighter side, we'll be re-airing our interview with talented young musician Raylee Nicole. I'm sure you'll enjoy her music. Plus, we'll tell you about a new app called Finding Rover that is reuniting pet owners with their lost dogs right here in our region and how you can sign up to protect your pet. We'll have all those stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat Report. Steve Van Zandt, the former superintendent of the Mountain Empire Unified School District in San Diego's rural East County, was arraigned Friday in San Diego Superior Court on a felony conflict of interest charge, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. While serving as superintendent of Mountain Empire, Van Zandt pushed through charter schools to operate in other school districts while allegedly profiting by having some of those same charters hire his own consulting firm, EdHive, Inc. Our own research here at East County Magazine revealed that Van Zandt's wife, Ingrid, a designer who opened her design business the same year her husband became superintendent of Mountain Empire in 2007, was also hired by the Mountain Empire District. Her LinkedIn page listed her as president and chief financial officer of EdHive and also principal creative director of Studio 360, her design business. Both companies list Mountain Empire School District among their clients. Oh, and interestingly, the San Diego District Attorney, who is prosecuting this case, is also listed among Studio 360's clients. Superintendent Steve Van Zandt authorized a dozen or more charters while at the helm of Mountain Empire before leaving in 2013 to accept the position as superintendent of the Sausalito-Marin City School District in Northern California. East County Magazine has been investigating Van Zandt since 2010, and we were the first to report on his charter school dealings and practice of setting up charters in other districts that profited his own. A reader questioned how the superintendent could afford to travel to Hawaii and the Caribbean, staying at posh resorts and sailing aboard a privately chartered catamaran to private islands, as the couple's Facebook pages at the time boasted. Ingrid's Facebook page also included photos of a new red Ferrari driven by her husband, Steve Van Zandt, and mentioned that they had just given a Porsche to the couple's son at UC Berkeley. Both Steve and Ingrid Van Zandt's Facebook pages have been recently scrubbed, with histories, posts, friends, basic biographical information, and nearly all photos removed. In August 2010, our story, titled Flurry of New Charter Approvals Raises Questions Over State Funding Priorities in an Era of Budget Shortfalls, probed Mountain Empire's questionable practice of opening up charters in other school districts that had high academic achievements. That included a charter middle school opened in the La Mesa Spring Valley District, a district that had high test scores at a time when Mountain Empire's own middle school test scores were in the bottom 10% statewide. Mountain Empire's schools were so dismal that the district was actually forced to close down its only middle school, and yet it continued to provide oversight for more and more charters opening under Van Zandt's supervision elsewhere. Those charter schools were public, taking public funds in the form of average daily attendance money. By sucking students away from high-performing existing public schools, those charters diminished resources for our public schools at a time when the recession was causing deep cuts in state funding to schools statewide. Mark Hansen, the former administrator of the Grossmont Union High School District, who happens to also head up Heartland Coalition, the publisher of East County Magazine, called Mountain Empire's opening of charters in other districts back then an absolute travesty, almost unimaginable, and he added that the district had a long history of, quote, poor standards and poor oversight. At the time of our story in August 2010, California had 860 charter schools in operation, of which half were untested models. We exposed the growing practice of districts making administrative fees for opening up charters in districts other than their own. And since then, that practice has led to lawsuits, including here in San Diego County. San Diego Unified and Grossmont Union High School districts have both launched legal actions to shut down charters operating without their permission within their boundaries. The practice also sparked legislation to restrict the practice, but Governor Jerry Brown vetoed that bill over concerns that it could force some existing schools to relocate. And not all of the charters are bad. Some are high-achieving and some are defended by parents around the state, that is. But in his veto message, the governor conceded that, unfortunately, it appears that some districts and charter schools have gone against the spirit of the law. More reforms are likely in the future, and the Van Zandt criminal charges could add fuel to the fire behind the effort to reform charter schools. Profiting off the district's charters personally through his consulting company and his wife's business venture aren't the only instances in which Van Zandt has faced allegations of wrongdoing. In an October 2010 article titled Mountain Empire Unified School District Quizzed Over Alleged Misuse of Special Funds, we revealed allegations by a former teacher and employees of Mountain Empire who alleged that special fund monies from the state that were intended to benefit low-income and non-English-speaking students were misspent or reshuffled. The story detailed costly staff additions, including three employees hired to manage those charter schools, while services for students were cut. Another East County Magazine story in September 2010 indicated that rural parents in the district were criticizing Van Zandt's shuffling of principals, contending that it would hurt local schools and also Spanish-speaking students. Van Zandt defended his actions then. He has also strongly defended his push for charter schools, which brought revenues into Mountain Empire Unified School District at a time when it was struggling financially. Back in 2010, he said of the charter schools, "As long as it's not taking a focus away, I think it's a good thing." The Union Tribune reports that that practice has been changed by Van Zandt's successor. Since Kathy Granger was hired as Mountain Empire's superintendent in December 2013, Mountain Empire has halted its trend of wooing and approving far-flung charters, the Union Tribune story states. Raised in Ramona, Van Zandt served as superintendent of the one-school Dehesa School District before he became superintendent of Mountain Empire and later Sausalito Marin City School District, where he worked part-time and commuted up from his home along the beach in San Diego. Last week, the Sausalito Marin City School District announced that Van Zandt is on an indefinite leave of absence at his own request, the Marin Independent Journal reported on Friday. Some parents and civic leaders in that district have raised concerns over Van Zandt giving priority to a charter school, Willow Creek Academy, over Bayside Martin Luther King Jr. Academy, a public school. But if Van Zandt is convicted in San Diego Superior Court on the conflict of interest charge, job tenure may be the least of his worries, since the former Mountain Empire school superintendent could face up to 3 years in prison. Such a conviction could serve as a learning experience for Van Zandt and for other districts seeking to cash in on the loophole in state law that has let opening up charter schools outside their boundaries become a cash cow for poorly performing districts to snatch funds away from higher performing schools in neighboring districts.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The National Park Service has announced it is being forced to change the name of some of the most iconic landmarks in Yosemite National Park due to a copyright claim filed by Delaware North, the former park concessionaire. Places slated for name changes include the historic Ahwahnee Hotel and the Wawona Hotel, both Native American names, as well as Curry Village, Yosemite Lodge, and Badger Pass. But now activists are mobilizing efforts to stop Delaware's greedy grab of treasured names on public lands. Both MoveOn.org and Care2 petition site have launched petitions asking Delaware to remove its trademark on the Yosemite names. You can find links to those at our site at eastcountymagazine.org. Care2's petition has over 30,000 signatures, and MoveOn's has also attracted thousands of signers. You can also contact Delaware directly through its website at DelawareNorth.com. Many are advising Delaware that they will be boycotting the many other venues where it operates concessions, which include major resorts, entertainment venues, other national parks, and stadiums. For listeners here in the San Diego area, where Delaware runs concessions at Qualcomm Stadium and Petco Park, Yosemite fans are urged to ask San Diego's mayor, city council, Chargers, and Padres to ask Delaware North to give up its copyright claim on Yosemite locations and to terminate Delaware's lease once the contract runs out if the company won't give back Yosemite's name to the National Park Service. Many San Diegans are already familiar with Delaware North. By the way, since Delaware received the concessions contract for Old Town State Park during Governor Schwarzenegger's tenure, replacing Diane Powers, creator of the Bazar del Mundo, much to the dismay of many Old Town visitors. Another way to stop Delaware's action is to ask your members of Congress to introduce a bill to prohibit Delaware North from getting any more federal contracts unless it releases copyright claims to all names within the national parks and other public lands. You can find more actions online by Googling the hashtag #HandsOffYosemite and share these actions with your friends on social media. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has issued a travel warning urging pregnant women and women who may become pregnant to postpone travel to Brazil, Colombia, El Salvador, French Guiana, Guatemala, Haiti, Honduras, Martinique, Mexico, Panama, Paraguay, Puerto Rico, Suriname, and Venezuela. That's because the Zika virus has now spread to at least 14 countries in the Western Hemisphere, as well as to Puerto Rico. That's a pandemic in progress, Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institute of Health, recently said, CNN reports. Tests have linked Zika virus to thousands of babies in Brazil born with microcephaly, a birth defect that causes infants to be born with small skulls. The condition causes brain damage and sometimes death. Zika is spread by mosquitoes biting an infected person and then biting another, transmitting the virus. The worst outbreak is in Brazil, where over 3,500 cases of microcephaly in infants have been confirmed, a 20-fold increase over 2014 when there were only 147 cases of the neurological condition. Women who are pregnant or who may become pregnant should talk to their doctors if they must travel and take steps to prevent mosquito bites. All travelers to these areas should use insect repellent containing DEET, picaridin, oil of lemon or eucalyptus, or IR3535. The CDC has indicated that these are safe for pregnant and nursing women. You should also wear lightweight long sleeves and long pants and consider wearing permethrin-treated clothing and gear. Be sure your sleeping area is screened to keep out mosquitoes or has air conditioning. There's no vaccine or treatment for the Zika virus infection, which is spread by Aedes mosquitoes. Two species of Aedes mosquitoes have recently been found in San Diego County, but so far no cases of Zika virus have been found locally. In the U.S., several cases have been diagnosed in Puerto Rico among individuals bitten by mosquitoes who had not traveled. At least 8 cases in the last 2 years have been diagnosed in travelers returning to the U.S. The mosquito season peaks in April, so many more cases are likely to occur across the Southern Hemisphere and other infested areas, health officials warn. Aedes mosquitoes can also carry deadly yellow fever, chikungunya, and dengue fever. In Mexico, there has been one imported case of Zika virus from Colombia, a case contracted by a mosquito bite in Chiapas, and another in the northern state of Nuevo León. But authorities predict Zika will become endemic. The disease is primarily spread by mosquitoes, though there is some evidence that it may also be transmitted sexually. The CDC advises that it is also possible that Zika could be spread through blood transfusions. There are no documented cases of this, but Zika markers have been found in blood of Zika patients. Only about 1 in 5 people who contract the Zika virus will develop symptoms. Symptoms may include fever, muscle and joint pain, rash, conjunctivitis, eye inflammation, or rarely neurological complications. But the newly found link to brain damage in babies of women who contract Zika virus while pregnant has made halting the spread of Zika a major public health priority. Researchers are racing to create a Zika virus vaccine and improved treatments, but for now, avoiding areas with Zika outbreaks or taking steps to avoid being bitten by mosquitoes if you must travel to infested areas are the only options. In San Diego County, health officials urge residents to get rid of standing water, since the Aedes mosquitoes can breed in just a thimbleful of water. Clean rain gutters and dump out water from planters, toys, vehicle tarps, old tires, and elsewhere. Clean out bird baths weekly. Keep water circulating in ponds and fountains, and don't let pool water turn green, since mosquitoes breed in stagnant water. The Aedes mosquitoes is aggressive during daylight hours, unlike native mosquitoes in our region. It can also breed indoors. If you believe you have Aedes mosquitoes in your area, contact the County Vector Control Office. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with a very disturbing story that sounds like the plot of a disaster thriller movie, but it's frighteningly real. The worst environmental disaster since the BP oil spill, a methane gas leak that began October 23rd at a storage well at Aliso Canyon in northern Los Angeles County, has pumped over 85,000 metric tons of methane into the air. According to the Environmental Defense Fund, each day of the leak spews as much climate pollutant into the air as 4.5 million to 9 million cars. The site is operated by Southern California Gas, a Sempra energy company that also supplies the gas for the San Diego region. The leak is endangering health and safety of residents, as well as contaminating the environment and pumping a powerful climate pollutant into the atmosphere. Already the worst methane leak ever in the United States, it may soon get a lot worse. A Los Angeles Times investigation reveals that efforts to plug the leak by drilling relief wells near the main well have been halted after a backwash from those efforts caused a crater 80 feet long, 30 feet wide, and 25 feet deep. That leaves the wellhead itself exposed and now at risk of a catastrophic blowout, the Times reports. Access to control valves are cut off, documents revealed. Should a massive explosion and fire occur within the 10-mile-long plume of methane over suburban neighborhoods, the scenario would be horrifying.
Timothy O'Connor, oil and gas director for the Environmental Defense Fund in California, has called this a mega leak, one of the biggest ever recorded. The plume is about 1,000 feet high and several miles long, he has stated. Methane has 94 times more climate warming power than carbon dioxide, and the Environmental Defense Fund has warned that even a small methane leak greatly accelerates the rate of climatic change. A single spark near the highly flammable methane plume could ignite a massive explosion and fire. The risk is so great that cell phones and watches are banned from the site, and a fix by drilling a deeper relief well under a best-case scenario is still weeks away. Sempra Energy reportedly told The Times it would not speculate on current conditions at the site, but physical sciences professor Grant Nelson of Cuesta College told The Times if the wellhead fails, the thing is just going to be full blast. Racing against time, the utility has proposed to capture about half of the still-leaking gas and burn it off, but now the California Public Utilities Commission has called a halt to that plan for now, unless fire officials and regulatory officials can agree it's safe. Regulators, no doubt mindful of the deadly San Bruno natural gas explosion that leveled a full city block, have noted that burning the gas could potentially cause a catastrophic explosion and fire, too. Now, the leak has slowed 60% since its inception nearly 3 months ago, so Southern California Gas Company's efforts were partly successful. But the amount of methane still spewing forth remains alarming for residents, environmentalists, and public health officials. Around 10,000 residents of nearby Porter Ranch have evacuated and thousands have been relocated by Southern California Gas. But new test results just conducted by Massachusetts-based consultants in recent days found high levels of methane in Northridge, Granada Hills, and Chatsworth, too, giving rise to calls for a much broader evacuation with the contamination continuing to spread. In some cases, methane levels ranged from double to an astounding 67 times higher than normal, EcoWatch reported on January 15th. Northridge, it's worth noting, is where the devastating 6.7 earthquake was centered in 1994. Should a major earthquake or a brush fire occur in the vicinity of the worst methane leak in history, the scale of the damage could be unthinkable. The methane contamination has spread all the way across the San Fernando Valley, according to Bob Ackley of Gas Safety, one of the consultants who took the measurements. Residents in these communities, like the displaced Porter Ranch residents, have complained of illnesses including vomiting, headaches, nosebleeds, eye irritation, and breathing problems. But so far, SoCalGas has not responded to their pleas for relocation outside of Porter Ranch. Los Angeles City Councilman Mitchell Englander has urged SoCalGas to relocate his constituents in these areas. Two schools have now been shut down. Many businesses and property values are impacted. And now, Los Angeles Supervisor Michael Antonovich has said he will ask supervisors Tuesday to halt all new residential developments slated for construction in much of the northern San Fernando Valley. Matt Pacucco, co-founder of the citizen group Save Porter Ranch, stated in an interview with Amy Goodman on the Democracy Now! Radio show that airs on KNSJ that living there is just like in hell. I don't know what's going to happen day to day. I don't know if I can work. I don't know if I can breathe. He added that when he feels sick, he worries he could be dying, and that bills are stacking up, unpaid, due to missed work because of the crisis. Governor Jerry Brown declared a state emergency on January 6th due to the Aliso Canyon Porter Ranch gas leak, but many contend that's too little, too late, and some cynically note that Brown's sister, Kathleen Brown, is a director on Sempra Energy's board. California Senators Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein have stepped up to the plate, both urging the federal government to take action to stop the leak. Michael Connelly with Scientific Aviation conducted research flights over the leak in early November, calculating that about 1 million kilograms of methane were being released every day. He told East County Magazine, "During my first flights, the readings were so high I was concerned that my instruments were broken." To put this in perspective, this is nearly one quarter of the methane emissions for the entire state of California just from this one leak. Besides methane, residents exposed to the methane leak faced concerns about benzene, toluene, and xylene that they could also be breathing in. Back in November, benzene, a compound known to cause blood cancer, was found to be leaking as well, the Inquisitor has reported. In addition, a substance added to the otherwise odorless gas itself is listed by the federal government as harmful to health, causing similar and potentially worse harm, including neurological damage or even death at very high levels. Residents have held rallies and meetings with officials from the governor on down. State health officials continue to insist that residents have not been exposed to toxic levels of pollutants, a seemingly implausible claim, given the unprecedented high levels of methane and the lack of measurements to assess many other substances known to be dangerous that many experts say are likely also in the 85,000 metric tons of methane released across the region. But that's not all. There are many more gas wells in the Porter Ranch region and across the San Fernando Valley. Investigations of the leaking well near Porter Ranch revealed several other lesser leaks. Residents say they've smelled gas for years, and they wonder how long they've been exposed to potentially harmful substances. Residents are demanding that all wells be shut down permanently in their communities, and they've set up at Save Porter Ranch and Porter Ranch gas leak hashtags online. And SoCalGas has said that at the Aliso Canyon leak, that one will be shut down permanently once they get the leak controlled. Los Angeles County Supervisor Mike Antonovich calls the disaster a mini Chernobyl. The gas field where the Porter Ranch catastrophe is occurring is the largest deposit west of the Mississippi, the LA Times reports. But it's a disaster that could play out in other communities across the United States, since there are hundreds of oil and gas storage facilities across America. Moreover, the Environmental Defense Fund's research has found that methane leaks are very common not only at big oil and gas facilities and oil fields, but even in neighborhoods. Why are so many leaks occurring? The EDF concludes it's a combination of oil and gas companies failing to monitor and maintain aging infrastructure and a lack of oversight of the oil and gas industry. For too long, we've gone without federal and state standards that require sufficient leak and safety inspections for oil and gas facilities. When leaks do occur, they may go unnoticed indefinitely, since methane is colorless and odorless, the environmental group concludes. So what is the solution? Now, a national movement is growing, calling for stronger national standards to require low-cost improvements, inspections, and leak detection to prevent these types of problems in the future. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency is finalizing the first-ever regulations of oil and gas methane emissions, but the bad news is those rules, if adopted, won't apply to facilities that already exist and are currently causing pollution and endangering the public. The rules would apply only to new facilities built in the future. The Environmental Defense Fund has launched a petition asking the White House to adopt stronger rules that would include the old facilities as well. Credo has started a separate petition asking President Obama and the Environmental Protection Agency for federal help to stop the worst methane leak in history. So far, over 100,000 people have signed it. You can find links to both petitions on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. Credo concludes, during the Gulf oil spill, President Obama said, "The tragedy unfolding on our coast is the most painful and powerful reminder yet that the time to embrace a clean energy future is now." That was true then, and it is true now, as Aliso Canyon continues its apocalyptic eruption, Credo says. Meanwhile, for the people of Porter Ranch and the communities across the San Fernando Valley, the future remains a giant unknown. Also unknown is just who will pay for all of the damage to thousands of people across Southern California. And just how much of that cost the ratepayers of Southern California Gas and Sempra Energy will be asked to shoulder, ratepayers who have already picked up the tab for a substantial portion of the 2007 wildfires that the Public Utilities Commission concluded were caused by Sempra Energy's lines. Next up, we'll have some national news from Public News Service, and then we'll be back with the East County Magazine show.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, January 18th, 2016. I'm Mary Sherman. Today's rundown features a variety of topics, including Clinton and Sanders clash over guns and health care, the economic roots of injustice examined on MLK Day, and a ban on new coal mining on public lands, a victory for environmental groups. Our top story, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders started Sunday night's presidential debate by sparring over who's tougher on gun control and painting different visions for the future of health care in America. Clinton blasted Sanders for voting repeatedly with the NRA, and Sanders in turn said Clinton's assertion that he bowed to the gun lobby was disingenuous and pointed to his lifetime rating of a D- from the NRA. The candidates also fought over health care.
Now, there are things we can do to improve it, but to tear it up and start over again, pushing our country back into that kind of a contentious debate, I think is the wrong direction.
We're not going to tear up the Affordable Care Act. I helped write it. But we are going to move on top of that to a Medicare for all system.
Sanders released his plan for a government-run single-payer plan just hours before the debate, and Clinton urged less sweeping action to build on President Barack Obama's health care plan. as people across the nation honor the work and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., an event today offers the chance to dive deeper into his teachings and how they relate to the way money is spent at the local, state, and federal levels. The story from Mona Shand in Missouri.
Ira Harrett with the American Friends Service Committee says it's important to remember that Dr. King's message is not just about people of different races and backgrounds living together peacefully.
Looking at the systems that create economic and racial injustice in our society, systems of violence that exist in our communities, and ways that we can work to change those systems.
Harrett will be one of the speakers at a forum called Moving the Money, Concrete Steps for Economic Justice for All People.
The U.S. Embassy in Baghdad confirmed several Americans had disappeared in Iraq on Sunday, and the State Department said it was working with Iraqi authorities to locate them amid multiple reports of a kidnapping. The incident comes after a week that has seen a deterioration of security in and around the Iraqi capital after months of relative calm. The ongoing search for 12 Marines who are missing after two helicopters crashed off Hawaii entered the third day with no plan Sunday to call off or suspend the massive effort. A green laser off a beach park on Saturday night struck a Coast Guard plane, forcing crew members to alter search patterns. 25 states have passed right-to-work laws, and West Virginia could be next. But critics charge a right-to-work bill is designed to undermine a basic source of middle-class jobs.
Supporters admit that the half of states with the laws have lower average wages, but they argue those states, many in the South, also have lower costs of living. Unions and the law's opponents argue that's the same as saying those states have lower standards of living and less union power to protect the middle class. Steve Metter has long worked for Kroger in Roanoke, Virginia, a right-to-work state. He says he gets paid a lot less than a similar Kroger worker here.
Big time difference. Same job, and the people here, because they're a non-right-to-work state, make more money. It's almost $2 an hour more.
Last week, the right-to-work bill, Senate Bill 1, passed the Senate Judiciary Committee on a party-line vote. Dan Hyman reporting.
Across the country, tens of thousands of rape kits are sitting in police evidence rooms just waiting to be tested. And Arizona's governor's named a task force there to identify the number of untested in the state. Shannon Rich with the Arizona Coalition to End Sexual and Domestic Violence says some of the kits may have sat untested for as long as a decade. And there are two reasons they often hear for kits not being tested.
One is funding. The tests aren't cheap, and so that can be an issue if the crime labs don't have the resources. The other, if the perpetrator isn't already identified, that they may not test the kit because they already know who the person is.
She says even in cases where the suspect is known, it's important to get their DNA into a database in order to help identify serial rapists. Environmental groups and clean energy advocates are praising the Obama administration's move to suspend new coal mining on public lands.
Interior Secretary Sally Jewell issued an executive order on Friday that puts a moratorium on new or modified permits and orders a review of the federal coal royalty program. Camilla Fiebelman, director of the Rio Grande chapter of the Sierra Club, says the royalties paid by coal miners on public lands have been shortchanging the public for decades.
Taxpayers may have lost upwards of $30 billion in revenue over the past 30 years, money that would go to fund schools and roads and projects very local to the places where the coal extraction actually takes place.
Mark Richardson reporting.
Nearly half of all Americans don't have a home inventory of their valuables in the event of an insurance claim, according to the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. With many families cooped up indoors during winter, experts recommend using the time to inventory items to make sure you're properly insured. Barry Carson is an insurance agent and says a record complete with pictures, receipts, and other details can be invaluable.
During a tragedy, a loss, sometimes we're not thinking straight, and we may forget about things that we have that were in our possession that was destroyed. And so it'll help bring back ideas of those things as well.
Experts recommend keeping careful records of jewelry and fine art, as well as family heirlooms. Copies of original sales receipts and appraisals are also helpful. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, Get trained to be a citizen journalist and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Governor Jerry Brown has proposed a $170 billion budget that includes a big increase in education funding and modest increases in programs for the poor, while also adding $2 billion to the state's rainy day fund. Relative to years past, the state budget is in good shape, says Brown, noting that education funding is at its highest level ever. 15 million Californians are now covered by Medi-Cal or Covered California. The minimum wage has risen to $10 an hour, and for the first time, the state will provide almost $400 million to low-wage working families through an earned income tax credit. But the governor adds, our rainy day fund is growing, and the proposed budget for next year will have a healthy surplus, even after spending several billion dollars on long overdue infrastructure investments. He stressed the importance of building up reserves for the next recession and cautions fiscal restraint must be the order of the day. He also called for chipping away at a $72 billion unfunded pension liability. The governor's proposed budget includes over $71 billion for K-12 schools and colleges, plus enough new funds for the California State University and University of California systems to avoid tuition hikes. It also has $1.4 billion more for Medi-Cal to help low-income Californians under the Affordable Care Act, and it includes a 15% increase in funding for the judicial, legislative, and executive branches, a move that could help ease clogged court systems. However, the governor's budget proposed a 21.8% decrease in environmental protection, a move that is bound to draw objections from environmentalists. Another area of controversy is funding for services on developmental disabilities. In a rare show of bipartisanship, both Republicans and Democrats, along with labor, have called for more money for disabled services. The budget does propose a $130 million increase in services for developmentally disabled people, but that is less than half of what advocates were seeking. Many programs for the disabled have been frozen for years with no recent increases. Local San Diego legislators offered their reactions to the budget proposal. Assembly Budget Chair Shirley Weber, a San Diego Democrat, says she is happy to see continued improvement in the state's fiscal health. She called that a testament to the collaborative efforts of Democrats in both houses of the legislature, the public, and the governor. Weber said she is particularly heartened by the proposed investment in education and funding for the courts, but she adds there is still room for improvement to help the state's most vulnerable populations. She wants to see more money for care providers of developmentally disabled Californians and removal of certain restrictions in the CalWORKs maximum family grant. She adds, I believe we can be optimistic about seeing some progress on these issues this year. Republican Assemblyman Brian Jones from Santee had this reaction to the proposed budget. While many today are celebrating the surge in revenue, I urge my colleagues on the other side of the aisle to show restraint as we move into the budget season, he said. There will be great temptation to spend these new funds on expensive pet projects or causes, but it's important we learn from the past. Jones added that he opposes extended tax increases, noting that this budget proposal represents almost a 42% increase since he took office in 2010. Jones concludes, working with my colleagues and Governor Brown, I hope to develop a budget that utilizes these windfall revenues to help further build up the rainy day fund, expand our water supplies, and rebuild our transportation infrastructure. Our surge in revenues provides our leaders with a rare opportunity to put our state on track for years to come, and it's critical we not waste this opportunity. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
If your property suffered major damage or was destroyed during last week's storms, you're eligible for property tax relief. You can apply to the county to have your property value reassessed to reflect its damaged condition. This tax relief is available for any property damage that includes homes and outbuildings, commercial and industrial properties, and mobile homes. Damage to vehicles and the contents of a home, such as furniture, are not eligible for this tax relief because it is not taxable. The reduced property value will remain in effect until the property is rebuilt or repaired. Once you rebuild or repair it to a condition similar to before the damage, you can have the property reassessed again to restore your full property value from before the flooding. County Assessor Recorder Clerk Ernie Jonenberg says, I would like to strongly encourage all property owners who suffered flood damage to their property in excess of $10,000 to contact my office for the necessary claim form at 619 619- 531-4993 or by visiting the assessor's website at sdarcc.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
County supervisors have approved spending $50,000 in neighborhood reinvestment funds to acquire land for two new libraries in Lakeside and in the Casa de Oro community in Spring Valley. The plan was proposed by East County Supervisor Diane Jacob. Supervisor Jacob says, "Our county libraries are more than just places to read and learn. They serve as the heartbeat of the community. The prospect of new libraries in Lakeside and Casa de Oro is particularly good news," she says, "because they would replace existing facilities that each community outgrew years ago." The new facilities will be the latest in a dozen new libraries opened in East County since Jacob took office in 1993. Other locations already open include Ramona, Julian, Spring Valley, and Rancho San Diego, and a new library is also slated to open this spring in Alpine. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. My very special guest today is Steve Loria with the California Health Network, and Steve is here to tell us all about Santee's Health Awareness Month. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
So, tell us first what California Health Network is all about.
California Health Network is a nonprofit 501c3 organization that I founded in 2012. We did a lot of work in the community for a few years, organized some larger events, did a lot of high school presentations on anti-obesity. Took a little break last year, but we kind of got back together again earlier this year to start with our first project, Santee Health Awareness Month, which we're doing right now in Santee.
And I understand that the Santee Health Awareness Month means that people can get free services on all kinds of health and fitness-related things, as well as discounts on some others. Can you give us a few examples of some of the free stuff they can get?
Absolutely. We have personal trainers giving away up to 4 sessions a month for free. We have a yoga instructor giving away a week of free classes. We have a chiropractor giving a free consultation, x-rays, etc. We have a couple different fitness studios giving away free classes. And there's so many more. There's more than 30 organizations helping us with the promotion this month.
Wow. I wish I lived in Santee so I could come take advantage of it all. It is open to Santee residents only, is that
Santee
correct?
Santee residents, yes. Although we'll be doing future promotions, looking at maybe Lakeside coming up in March.
Very exciting. Now, in addition to the free classes and things, there are also some discounts on different kinds of health services. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we have a martial arts studio giving half off the regular rates. We have a discount from Sportsplex, the largest sports facility in East County, giving some discounts on some of their event packages.
Dental, I understand?
Yeah, we have a dental office giving $100 off any service.
Wonderful. Now, you've got an event coming up, I understand, on the 23rd of January. Can you give us some details?
Yes, Councilman John Minto will be leading a walk through Walker Preserve in Santee.
It's beautiful. That's the new preserve right on the river.
Right. It's opened earlier this year, and he's going to be walking with whoever wants to join him, asking him any kind of questions they want. And John's a great guy for helping us out with that.
Beautiful. I understand you've been getting some support from a lot of community leaders. Can you give us some examples?
Yes, we had an introduction video from Senator Joel Anderson and John Minto. We had an article in Union Tribune, and several other city councilmen actually talked about health in Santee, and they're all into fitness and health in the community.
It's a great idea. What kind of responses are you getting from the community?
Doing some tracking of people who have come to our Facebook page, and we've had about 18,000 views directly from our Facebook posts.
18,000, wow.
18,000, yeah.
Great. Well, we had a story on our side about it, too, so hopefully we sent you some traffic over there.
That'd be great.
So, speaking of websites, if people want to get more information about the full list of services, how they can participate, get these free services or discount services, or sign up for the walk, where can they go?
There's a direct link. It's californiahealthnetwork.org/healthawarenessmonth.
Mm-hmm.
Those words are both spelled out.
Very good. And if you missed that, folks, you can also go to eastcountymagazine.org, click on our health section, and we have a story there also in the Santee section up there. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know, Steve, about the California Health Network or the Santee Health Awareness Month?
California Health Network is always looking for new ways to help promote health in the community. If you need anybody to do any kind of promotions at schools, we've done over 60 presentations at high schools. We've done corporate wellness promotions and always available for consultations for fitness.
Very, very good. And what was the main reason for starting the Santee Health Awareness Month?
Looked around at some of the community statistics. East County is not one of the healthier communities statistically-wise. It's a higher rate of chronic disease and obesity than some of the other, communities in San Diego.
Yeah. Now, we've mentioned the free fitness programs and the discount health services like dental and so forth, but what about low-income people? I understand there's actually some free health care if you're low-income. Can you give us the details on that?
Yeah, one of the listings on our site is actually Volunteers in Medicine in El Cajon, and they actually service the under- or uninsured people for no cost.
Wow, that's wonderful. And is that all the time or just during this Health Awareness Month for
Santee? That's actually all the time.
Wow. That's a wonderful resource to know about.
It is, yes.
Very good. So the website, one last time, where people can go for information is?
CaliforniaHealthNetwork.org/Health Awareness Month.
Excellent. Thank you so much. We've been speaking with Steve Loria with the California Health Network about the Santee Health Awareness Month. I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thanks for having me.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
But all I know is this feels right when we're under the stars tonight. These butterflies that I can't fight, so I'll just let them fly.
This is Leon Thompson, and I'm here with Raylene Nicole, a promising young musician from East County. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thank you. Yeah, so I grew up my whole life in East County, my whole 18 years of life. We've moved around a lot, but basically it's been the same two freeway exits the whole time. I went to elementary school, middle school, Boston Valley, and then Las Coches Creek, and then I went to high school, Granite Hills, and I just graduated.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, I first heard you at the Coyote Music Festival at Cuyamaca College. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that was a really fun experience. That was the first music festival I've ever been a part of, and I had no idea that I was actually going to be in that. And one day, I was at Starbucks in Rancho San Diego. They have an open mic, so I was at the open mic. Then I happened to walk in to grab a Starbucks, and on the little bulletin board, they had like a little flyer saying, oh, musicians need it. I'm like, oh, that's me. I think it was a website, and I looked on and it was the music festival, and I'm like, that would be super cool. And they were having tryouts, so I went to the tryouts, and it was really intimidating because I walked in and I was still a senior in high school, so it's all these college kids in this big giant like performance hall, so, like with a stage and chairs, like theater looking. And so I was on the stage all by myself, me and my guitar, and then all these people in the seats. Part of their class was to judge the auditions, so they're all staring at me with papers, writing down notes. I had no idea what they were writing, and they're all looking up at me every now and then. So, and then I started playing, and one guy in the front, I remember, was like dancing to it, so I felt a lot better. I was like, okay, they like it. I'm not going to die. So, and then I think they emailed me or called me back. They really liked your audition. We'd like to have you play at the festival. So my drummer, Chemo, and I just got together, practiced a little bit, came up with the set, and then we got to play, and it was so much fun. It was the coolest thing. It was, you know, it was a really nice day, so everyone was out there on blankets, like with picnics, and there was like tons of little booths around, and I think it was only their second or third annual. It was really new, so I'm sure it's going to even get bigger and bigger every year. So the students were running everything. That's a really cool class, you know, to teach kids to run a festival. That's something that you don't learn every day. There was a lot of other musicians and bands, and they had face painting. I got to get my face painted and snow cones and just little vendors and everything. So it was a really cool way to bring the whole college area community together.
Speaking of your music, how would you describe it?
I would describe my music as like a relaxing summer playlist, you know, when you're driving in the car. I have some upbeat songs that really get people going. I'm a typical teenage girl, so what else am I going to write about rather than, you know, the boy I have a crush on or something? So a lot of my songs are about that kind of feeling when you don't really know the person too well, but you can't wait to see what happens in the future. And I think that's one of the funnest feelings ever, is like the feeling of possibility or who knows what's going to come. You know, I really like this guy and he, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, but I like him. That's all I know. I have a couple other ones. They're also upbeat, and I'm trying to write more of these songs lately because it's how I feel. And it's more just about believing in yourself and not really listening to negative people or, you know, just positive sort of things and just about good feelings and sounds like rainbows, butterflies kind of thing. But, you know, I like that. So I like inspiring people to believe in themselves and go for what they really want to do rather than just be sad. But then on the other hand, I do have a couple sad songs that are extremely sad. So, but I think that's kind of what I like to make myself relatable, saying, you know, I understand how they feel or like certain feelings that people don't like to touch on. But if the lyrics can understand how they're feeling, I think people like that and they'll relate to that and want to listen to that more. Yeah.
Can you do one of your songs for us?
Yes, I can. Is that the one
Pouring
I just...
Down.
Yes, I can.
All right. Thank you. Let's hear that.
So much more I haven't told you. There's so much more that you don't know. And everything's so new, but just trust me and I'll trust you. I've still got so much more of me to show. You've got those eyes that make me wonder. I wonder if you feel the way I do. Now I can't concentrate and it's your fault. I can't think straight, just tell me if your hands are shaking too. We're not too sure about anything, but honestly for me, that's okay. Me in the rain out where it's pouring down, but I don't care, I'm giving up and I'm so scared to let you in. But all I know is this feels right when we're under the stars tonight. These butterflies that I can't fight, so I'll just let them fly. How come everything's so beautiful when I'm with you? The way we laugh on accident. I think I'm going under as we dance to the flash of thunder. We're so cool, we won't go inside just yet. We're not too sure about anything. But honestly, for me, that's okay. You kiss me in the rain out where it's pouring down, but I don't care, I'm giving up and I'm so scared to let you in. But all I know is this feels right when we're under the stars tonight. These butterflies that I can't fight, so I'll just let them fly. Butterflies that I can fight, so I'll just let them fly. Fly.
Oh, thank you, Ray Lee.
You're welcome.
So what's coming up in your career? What is next for Riley?
The next thing I really want to do is record a full album, 12-song album, mix of, you know, happy and sad ones. I still need a couple more songs before I do that, but I want to record that album, kind of tour around the country, kind of the poor musicians tour where I, you know, get in my own car and drive around, but hey, a tour is a tour. Just spread the music and see, you know, how far I can get it to go.
How did you get your musical training?
I have been taking piano lessons ever since I was 5 years old, and then I went all the way until high school started. So up till I was 15, so it was 10 years of piano lessons, and then I did, I think, like a week or two of vocal lessons when I was in middle school or something, and I didn't like it very much. And then even back then, I wasn't trying to sing. I just went to lessons just because, but I never really started singing until after my freshman year in high school, and that's when I started playing guitar as well, because my grandparents got me a guitar for Christmas during my freshman year, and then I didn't really do much with it. I learned a couple chords, and then that was that, and then after my freshman year of high school, during that summer, I think I put up my first YouTube video and all my friends were like, oh my God. Now I look back on it and I'm like, oh, that was not very good at all. But back then, I mean, I got tons of praise for it. So I was like, okay, if I can hide on the computer screen and they like it, now I can go in person and maybe they'll like it too. So I started to play covers at local coffee shops and things like that in South Park and North Park, City Heights area. I started writing originals and playing those. And then that got me to go up and produce the EP and everything. And I never took any guitar lessons. If you really, really want to learn something, you'll figure out a way to teach yourself. You will learn it. And especially today with the internet, it was so easy. I was on YouTube all the time. UltimateGuitar.com was a blessing because once you learn how to read, because I used the book to teach myself to read chords and tab. And then once I could do that, I could get on Ultimate Guitar. And then each song had chords and tabs with it. And I was like, okay, well, now I can play the song. I would play it like 5 hours a day, like so much. And so I think I learned quickly. It kind of kickstarted a lot of time. I compacted it into one summer. But yeah, I never took lessons. I just used YouTube videos and online everything. So.
We're really glad that you did.
Thanks.
And your voice is lovely and sweet.
Thank you.
And I like your chord progressions and changes and the range. It's just beautiful. So
thank
really
you so
appreciate
much.
You coming in
thank
and talking
you.
To us.
Thanks.
We've been speaking to Riley Nicole. So how can people reach you if they want to hear some more of your music?
Well, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all those social network things that everyone likes to go on. Just look up Riley Nicole, which is R-A-E-L-E-E. That's Riley. And then Nicole is N-I-K-O-L-E. And then I have a website, www.RayleeNicole.com. www.RayleeNicole.com.
Thank you so much, Riley.
Finding Rover is a cell phone app for finding lost dogs. County Animal Services was the first animal sheltering organization in the nation to partner with Finding Rover, and the arrangement is again showing its worth. Within a time frame of 9 days, the facial recognition app has reunited 3 dogs with their owners. The free app uses photos to match the faces of lost dogs with those that have been found or admitted to one of the 3 county shelters. Owners upload a picture of their dog to the app. Shelter staff also take a picture of every dog that comes into their facilities and add it to the Finding Rover database. When the software sees a match, the app can notify the owner. The first dog found, Maxwell, had been missing for months after getting away from its caretaker. The Rottweiler mix ended up at the county's Gaines Street facility on Wednesday, December 30th. Within 4 hours, his owner claimed him. Another dog, Henry, ran away on New Year's Day. His owner put up flyers and searched the neighborhood. She even called Animal Services Emergency Dispatch, but it hadn't received any calls. The owner was really concerned because the Jack Russell Terrier is diabetic and needs medication twice a day. The dispatcher, Jennifer Jordan, told her to try the Finding Rover app. The owner's 11-year-old daughter downloaded the app, and by the time they got home from their search for the dog about 30 minutes later, Finding Rover had emailed them to say Henry could be found at the county's facility on Gaines Street. Then last Friday, Finding Rover saved the day again. The owner of a missing German Shepherd tried to find her dog on Craigslist and 2 pet finding websites without any luck. As soon as she tried Finding Rover, she began getting messages that her dog was at Animal Services Care Facility in Carlsbad. Finding Rover gives Animal Services yet another tool for finding lost dogs. Callers with ID tags can fall off, and you need a veterinarian or an animal shelter to scan animals for microchips. With Finding Rover, anyone with a smartphone or computer can find matches for lost and found pets. Finding Rover is easy to use. The app allows you to look for adoptable dogs and share the latest dog news, as well as make a poster for a lost or found animal. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show.
We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space,
to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.